material available readily to you by calling 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we ask you to go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com, where you can listen to our programs and then pray for America, pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection.
Do you know where the 78 potentially active volcanoes in U.S. are located? And do you know the locations of the top 300 prime terrorist targets? You can find these answers and more in the new interactive CD book, Prudent Places USA. With the more than 50 interactive parameters, you can pinpoint natural and man-made disaster areas, brewing environmental catastrophes, the safest cities, the best places for solar and wind energy, and much, much more. Complete with 3 gigabytes of detailed information on each of 3,000 plus counties in the U.S., including 550 high-resolution full-color maps and full-color photographs, as well as detailed information and analysis to help you zero in on the best places to live, the ideal location for cabins and vacation homes, as well as safe and unsafe areas. Get Prudent Places USA for only $29 plus shipping by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And we need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guest. And for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Roy Upton. And, of course, Roy lives here in the Monterey Bay area, but he has, of course, been very, very concerned about the spraying for the light brown off apple moth that they're going to do in the central coast of California. Now, to many of you out there listening across America, this may seem like, well, it's not going to affect me. They're not going to spread my area. But, of course, how do you know they're not going to spread your area down the line? Basically, there are people who are intent upon spraying without good scientific proof. Now, we're told, oh, the science is all in. The government officials have said they see no credence in any of the people who had reactions after the first round of spraying. Well, did they talk to any of the people? Certainly many of the people who have complained bitterly about health matters and children have had problems, their families have not been contacted. So how do they know there are no problems? Well, they simply announced it, and we're supposed to believe, but can we really trust them? What do we know about the light brown apple moth? And then, of course, if there's really a problem, and the problem is, of course, that the light brown apple moth is going to decimate the agriculture of our community, then why aren't they spraying the agricultural areas? Why are they spraying the areas where the people live? Well, they're going to say that's where the light ground moth is. Well, if that's where it is, and it's not getting into the agricultural area, then why are you concerned? Well, let's get to Roy, because he knows a lot more about this than I do. Roy, are you there?
I am.
All right, fine. Why don't you tell our listeners that this is an entirely different audience, so don't be bashful. How did you get involved in this? Why have you put so much work into trying to get the truth out about the light brown apple moth?
Well, essentially, the way I got involved was...
You want to speak up just a little louder, please?
I'll do my best. Is that
that's
better?
Yeah, that's much better. Thank you.
I got involved. Basically, I was much like other people. I had no idea that the spray was coming. I really wasn't conscious about what was happening. And then after about 2 weeks after the spray in Monterey, which was, Monterey got sprayed twice. And about 2 weeks after the second spray in Monterey, I took a walk down Elkhorn Slough, which is a bird sanctuary, down here south of Santa Cruz. And I was aghast at finding about 30 dead cormorants, which are these seabirds that swim underneath the water and catch fish and stuff. You see them sunning themselves on rocks with their wings out all the time. And there were 30 of these, just stone-cold dead, but all in pristine condition, not eaten by bugs. They hadn't been there a long time. What it meant was that they all died around the same time. And I was flabbergasted because I was saying, what could have possibly caused all these birds to die at once? Well, I didn't pay attention to it with regard to the spray because I didn't make that connection. But then after we got sprayed here in Santa Cruz, which was in November, a few weeks after, the Santa Cruz Sentinel immediately, from the day after the spraying, we got sprayed on Thursday night, on Friday morning, people walking their dogs along the beaches or just taking their morning walk or run along the beach were literally reporting hundreds of dead seabirds along the coast. And I said, son of a gun, this has to be connected. It can't just be a coincidence that Monterey got sprayed and here are these dead birds all at, you know, dying at the same time. And then but literally the day after the spray, the morning after that night spray, finding, you know, literally hundreds of dead birds. And since then, I went and I looked at the toxicological information that was available on this solution that was sprayed. I looked at the manner in which birds die from red tide to see if that could have done it.
Hold that thought, Roy. We're going to be back in just a minute. Are you on a regular phone?
I am.
Okay.
I'm on a headset.
Oh, please get off. Please, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is Roy Upton, who I hope is going to a hard line rather than a headset, because a headset doesn't really come through well on radio, not national radio anyway. And Roy has certainly been very, very concerned about the spraying that's taking place here. Now, people in other parts of the country may say, well, that doesn't involve me. Ladies and gentlemen, we are all one, and of course, if they can spray our area and hurt our wildlife and hurt our people, they can spray in your area. Well, of course, we have told that we have an infestation of the light brown apple moth, which somehow had gotten here from New Zealand, and of course, the light brown apple moth threatens the agricultural growth in this area. We have a very large agricultural segment in our society in Monterey County and Santa Cruz County. And because this is a threat, the light brown apple moth is a threat to the agricultural areas, they're going to spray the people. They're going to spray the areas where the people live. Well, of course, Roy had been noticing that immediately after the spraying in Monterey, which is south of where we live in Santa Cruz County. Immediately after that, there were a number of dead fish in the Elkhorn Slough where he was walking. And it seemed very, very strange. A lot of dead birds, some 30 dead birds just laying there in the sanctuary. And then after they sprayed in the Santa Cruz area, why, suddenly people walking along the beach reported all sorts of dead birds here in the Santa Cruz area immediately after the spraying. And that was really what got him concerned. Of course, the government official says it isn't true. You can trust us. I mean, after all, if you don't believe us, you must be a conspiracy nut. If you don't believe us, you probably believe it's the radiation, the spray. Ha, ha, ha. And they demonize and they attack and they vilify anybody who says, well, we'd like to know the scientific studies on this. They said, we have the scientific studies. We say there's nothing wrong, but have they really got the scientific studies, Roy? Certainly we heard on KSBW just the other night, Joe Heston came on and said, the scientific studies are in. Are the scientific studies in? What science have they applied to this? Do we even know what's in this spray?
Well, we do know what's in the spray.
What is in the spray?
Now?
What? That's much better. Thank you.
We do know what's in the spray. The governor required that the ingredients of the spray be disclosed.
All right.
Now, there are some people that believe that maybe not all the ingredients were disclosed, or that maybe there are other ingredients added to the tanks before that this solution is sprayed.
All right. Hold on. We'll be back here in just a moment with Roy Upton. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Roy is talking about the spraying that they're going to be, called Femarone, I believe, something. And anyway, he says that they have actually released the ingredients of the spray. Has anybody checked out those ingredients to find out whether they're toxic at all?
Yeah, there have been a number of toxicological reviews that people like myself
or people that are familiar with pesticides have done, and we've written reports on these, and many of them are marine and ecological toxins, and then many can contribute to the development of red tide, which can also be toxic to marine life. So there are a number of toxic properties associated with these compounds. There's one compound, BHT, that's both listed as a carcinogen and a mutagen, and as well as a liver toxin. There's another one, tricaprylmethylammonium chloride, which is a surfactant that's in this material. That's probably the most toxic of the components, and that also is listed as a carcinogen and a mutagen.
Well, why would they want to be spraying? Why would they want to be spraying the public with carcinogens?
Again, you know, they believe that the concentration that they're applying is too small to affect anybody in a demonstrable way. But you ask the basic question: is there science that supports that? And the answer is a unequivocal no.
But of course they claim, and I heard Joe Heston on Channel 8 television saying, the science is in, the scientific studies are in, there is no danger. All these people are saying that they're ill, there is just nothing to it, the authorities have looked at them. But have the authorities really gone around and interviewed the people who said they were sick?
No, they specifically said they did not speak with any of the people, they did not speak with any of the physicians that reported cases. All they looked at was the reports that were submitted, i.e. the comments from people. And they discounted many if they didn't have a date on it, and they discounted many if they didn't have an address on it, or whatever information, certain information was missing, they completely discounted them. So no, they didn't do any scientific review of the adverse effects that were actually reported, including the one of an 11-month-old boy who almost died.
Well, then why would they make this statement that the science is in? And if they didn't actually talk to the people, how do they know what the reaction was?
Their perspective on the science being in is Secretary Kawamura can stand there and say, the Environmental Protection Agency allows us to use this. So he can kind of defer to EPA to say, you know, they allowed us to use this, therefore it must be scientifically safe.
Well, of course, but
if you go to their documents, it specifically states that the EPA exempted this material from being tested.
No, wait a minute. How could they exempt it and then say that they you know, that they support its use?
So that's our point. Is we don't believe that that's congruent either. We believe that if they haven't done the studies, they should not be implying and stating that this is safe because no studies were done.
The Environmental Protection Agency then has not given clearance for it. They've just said we're not going to object. Well, but then this is a political decision, not a medical decision.
No, it's very much a political decision because the Secretary of Agriculture in the United States, the USDA, deemed this to be an emergency, an agricultural emergency. Virtually all testing was basically circumvented. Environmental impact reviews were circumvented. The EPA tests, usually there's 22 tests that are required before you approve of a pesticide being used. All those 22 tests were completely circumvented, and given the material was just given an exemption, said, yes, you can use this because we think it'll be safe because other similar things we've sprayed on lettuce before was safe, so we believe this will be safe.
But of course they're not spraying it on
lettuce. No test whatsoever.
But they're not spraying it on lettuce, they're spraying it on people.
That's one of our other contentions as well, is that in New Zealand, where they've used similar type products, they've only used them on agricultural areas. They've used them on, you know, vegetables and fruits, not on human beings. And when they did do an aerial spraying of another compound on residential areas in Auckland, New Zealand, those people got sick just like the people in Monterey and Santa Cruz got sick. So this shouldn't be a surprise to them. They should recognize that there is a health hazard in using these products.
And, you know, if they're really concerned about the agriculture, they ought to be sparing the agricultural areas, not the people.
Well, really what they should be doing, they should be aware of the fact that, and something you said earlier needs to be clarified, is that This is likely, the moth is likely not going to cause any damage to California produce and fruit whatsoever. And the reason being is that California agriculture already controls, they already have treatment programs against things like mealybugs and aphids and codling moth and things like that, that they're already treating for. And all of those treatments also will control the light brown apple moth. So literally, there's no additional expense that anybody can anticipate California agricultural interests to incur because they're already treating for pests that'll kill light brown apple moths.
But
they don't need to do anything else for it.
But they tell us, you know, of course, what's going to happen is that other countries will want to buy our products because they don't want to get the light brown apple moth, and so they're going to simply ban American products. How would you answer that?
It's actually easily answered. They specify Canada and Mexico as being the two primary trading partners that they have to deal with regarding light brown apple moth. Both Mexico and Canada have quarantines against the light brown apple moth only because the U.S. has quarantines against the light brown apple moth. If it was up to Mexico and Canada, they wouldn't even quarantine LBAM. But the U.S. is their biggest market, so they followed U.S. requirements. So if the U.S. were to change its policy about LBAM, Mexico has already publicly stated that they're willing to change their policy, and Canada has already expressed that they would be willing to review their policy regarding LBAM quarantine. So that's all smokes and mirrors. This is not about trade equilibrium. This is about getting emergency funding for the USDA and for the CDFA to conduct these types of emergency eradication programs.
Well, now, of course, you mentioned that several of the products in this spray that they're using are carcinogens. Have they done any animal studies to see whether or not they will develop, you know, the cancer if exposed to this for any period of time?
There's been no animal studies, no reproductive studies on higher animals, I should say. They did a single battery of studies on fathead minnow, a specific minnow, with regards to toxicology, but they've done no higher, like primate studies, and definitely no animal studies, no human studies, because they're not allowed. But here's the thing, is that they can develop models. There are models that they can use that will determine whether or not long-term exposure may cause reproductive problems or may result in an increased rate of cancer later on. There are models that they can use to establish that without doing higher animal or human studies, but they haven't done any of those.
I see. Well, of course, they say that if we object to what they're doing now, they're going to spray us with something that's much more toxic. In other words, you let us do what we want to, or we're really going to get to you.
Yeah,
I resent that attitude on the part of these government bureaucrats who seem to think that they're so much smarter than us common folks.
Yeah, I resent it too, and I also think that it's a kind of inflated threat, and that they wouldn't really do it because they couldn't get away with it. If they were going to spread, look at how much opposition there's been to this spray. If they try to spray us with something more toxic, you would really see the stuff hit the fan, and they wouldn't get away with it. But they use that line. What they also said to farmers was that if we don't get rid of the moth, we're going to have to quarantine everything in the state of California, and we're going to have to fumigate it before it's sent to other countries. And that's another bold-faced lie that's just used to stimulate fear in the farmers so that the farmers won't oppose this pheromone spray, because they say if they're thinking, oh, we're going to get sprayed with something worse, or we're going to have all of our crops fumigated, I would rather have the pheromone. But this is the way that CDFA is scaring, instilling a tremendous amount of fear in farmers and the agricultural industry overall in order to support their own position.
Well, that's really very, very disturbing to hear that they're actually going to this length. Now, my understanding is, of course, that they are actually talking about spraying San Francisco, because, of course, it's in the population there, but San Francisco doesn't have any agriculture.
No, but again, their policy is that they feel they can eradicate this thing now so that it won't get into agriculture later. But again, as far as I'm concerned, a complete lie. We were given a list of 274 eradication programs that have been conducted by the CDFA since 1982. 274 programs were implemented to get rid of 9 pests. Well, think about that. They started getting rid of 9 pests in 1982. In 2006, they were still eradicating the same pests. So for 26 years, they've been engaged in an almost worthless or unsuccessful eradication programs for 9 different pests. They can't succeed at eradication.
All right, fine. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Roy Upton. We're talking about the light crown upper mouth. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this afternoon is Roy Upton, and we're talking about the light brown apple moth and the fact that the government officials, both in Washington, D.C. and in Sacramento, seem to be intent upon spraying our local community. They want to spray the civilians, the people, so that they can, protect the agriculture. And my suggestion is we ought to be, of course, spraying the agriculture. We're going to be, so certainly as far as we analyze this is concerned, what about Sonoma? Don't they have the light brown apple moth up there in Sonoma?
Yeah, it was identified in Sonoma. It's been identified in about 12 different counties in California.
I see. Well, are they going to spray all of those counties? Is that what they have in mind?
They haven't outlined exactly what they'll do to the different counties. Their determination is based on population density. So if there's a large population or very concentrated population, such as in Monterey and Santa Cruz and San Francisco, aerial spraying is definitely central to their program. But, for example, down in Los Angeles, they found a single light brown apple moth in Los Angeles, and then lo and behold, they said, we eradicated it in Los Angeles. Think about that. Think about the ridiculousness of that. They found one LBAM, and they haven't found another one since, so therefore they say we eradicated it from Los Angeles.
But, of course, how did they eradicate it? Did they spray? What did they do to get rid of it?
They didn't do anything. They caught the one single moth, got caught in a trap and died, so then they said, oh, we eradicated it. This is their mentality with regards to how they determine that eradication is successful. It's an absolute point of ridiculousness for them to think that they caught the only light brown apple moth that was flitting around Los Angeles. The things have a 3 to 4 week life cycle. You know, so there's literally likely tens of thousands that are flying around Los Angeles that they haven't caught. But because they've only caught one thus far, they claim a successful eradication.
All right. Well, now the thing that we are being told is the fact that we've got to get rid of the light brown apple moth because it's going to decimate the agricultural products of our community. But what about over there in New Zealand where they've had the light brown apple moth for how long have they had it over there? Do we have any idea?
Yeah, for about 100 years.
So they've had it there for 100 years. Does it decimate their agricultural products?
No, not at all. In the 1970s, there was some damage that was associated with grapes and apples. But you got to understand, that was at a time when, and the scientific literature states this, that was at a time when organophosphate pesticides were widely used, and they killed back all the beneficial predators that would normally eat the light brown apple moth. Without those predators, light brown apple moth did become a pest. However, the use of organophosphates have been banned. for the most part in New Zealand since then, and since then, LBAM has not been an agricultural or economic problem in crops whatsoever.
All right, fine. So if it's not a problem there, why are they making such a big fuss about it being such a problem here?
I don't think they've caught up with the science, really, and I don't think they've caught up with the experience of agricultural people on the ground in New Zealand. You know about Dan Hodder and Jeff Rosendale going over to New Zealand and actually seeing what they're doing over there. Well, when they went over there, they met with people in academia, people in the agricultural administration.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here with Roy Upton. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and just Roy is basically saying that the light brown apple moth has been in New Zealand for 100 years. Only one occasion did it give any problems, and that was when they were using organophosphate insecticides or pesticides that were killing all the other little critters over there, the other bugs and things, which ordinarily would keep the incidence of the light brown apple moth down. As soon as they got rid of the organophosphate sprays, which were really very, very deadly sprays, why, of course, they haven't had any trouble. In other words, the other insects, there's a balance of nature, and they keep the light brown apple moth in check. It does not affect the crops. They ordinarily spray the crops for other things, mites and all the things you spray crops for, and infestations. And that, of course, prevents the light brown apple moth from doing any problem at all. But they don't spray the general population over there. They can't because, of course, it's been there for 100 years. It is not a problem for their agriculture at all, other than the fact that America, of course, makes a big fuss about this, and now, of course, they want to spray our civilian population, not the agricultural areas. They want to spray the civilian population, the heavily populated areas here in Monterey County and Santa Cruz County, and then they're talking about San Francisco and other areas because, well, of course, we're not going to. We have to spray the populated areas because, of course, it's going to decimate the agriculture. And yet, in other countries, it doesn't decimate the agriculture. And there have been several people who actually went over to New Zealand from the Santa Cruz area. They were so concerned; they wanted to find the truth out. And when they came back, they prepared a report. And of course, this report was submitted. And everybody says, the people in the government who want to spray the people, say that the report is not valid. How can they say that? I mean, have they sent anybody over to talk to the people in New Zealand?
No, this is the thing that's really sad, Stan, is that they basically, when Dan Harder, who's a biologist from UCSC, and Jeff Rosendale, who's a horticultural expert from Watsonville, when they went to New Zealand, they asked everybody that they met, who else has talked to you from California about this problem? And everyone to a person said, you guys are the first ones that have come over here and talked to us. And the only people that it seems that the CDFA has spoken with, or I should say the United States Department of Agriculture, is one single researcher in southern New Zealand who happens to be an expert on pheromones, but he doesn't seem to know what's going on with the rest of the country. And what we found, though, what we think we found out last week, was that one of the reasons why he's pushing the pheromone pesticide solution as the tool of choice for LBAM is because he really can't use it in New Zealand anymore because it's not really needed to control LBAM anymore because agriculture has learned how to manage LBAM to a high degree of efficiency and a high level of cost effectiveness, that they don't need to do aerial spraying anymore. So this guy needs to find a customer for his product and his research.
That's essentially
the bottom line, and that's who CDFA went to for their primary consultation on LBAM.
But I thought now pheromone was actually manufactured here in the United States by Arnold Schwarzenegger's, Governor Schwarzenegger's major financial contributors.
Well, that's true. It's manufactured by Sotera, but this gentleman is literally one of the world's leading researchers on pheromone development as far as development of products. I don't know if he gets royalties for the products. I don't even know if he has a commercial interest in the actual product or maybe he's been a researcher for Sutera. I don't know that. But his primary research over the last 25 years has been to find pheromone solutions and to develop pheromone technologies that then can be used in agriculture. But, again, because the Australian and the New Zealand folks have learned how to manage LBAM without the use of widespread aerial pesticide spraying, he no longer has an outlet for his research and technology. So he has to come to the U.S., so he has to sell his concept to the U.S., and it seems that the USDA has bought it hook, line, and sinker.
Well, of course, the thing is, has pheromone ever been used for a spraying of civilian areas before?
Not that anybody knows. CDFA says that pheromones are being used over Chicago and parts of Florida. We can't find any published data on that.
It was never used
as part of an eradication program, and that's really the more important question to ask. Have pheromones ever successfully eradicated a species anywhere in the world? And the answer is, again, an unequivocal no.
But what about the people in Chicago and the other areas? Does anybody know anything about the people?
We don't. We have no idea where, what kind of pheromones are being used or for which pests or where and when.
We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Roy Upton, who's really certainly done a tremendous amount of work on the pheromone that they're going to be spraying here. Now, Roy, did they give us any idea when they did the spraying in Chicago and other areas before?
No, we haven't been able to find any information on that at all, Stan. We've done, as far as online searching, looking for what pests are they trying to control, what pheromones are they using, when did they do it, were there any adverse effects. We haven't been able to find any information like that.
All right, fine. And will the Department of Agriculture, either here in the state of California or at the national level, give you that information if they claim that, you know, it's been used before and that no problems?
I'm not sure that anybody's really followed up and asked them directly for that. I haven't myself, just because I'm busy on other things, but that would be a good question to ask them directly.
All right, certainly. Biggest thing is, are they using us as guinea pigs, those people here in the Central Coast of California? And certainly I don't think the people up in San Francisco are very happy about being sprayed either, are they?
No, not at all. I think you can call an experiment simply because whenever you apply something to a broad spectrum of a population that's never been applied to that population before, when you apply something to people that's never been tested for long-term health effects, no respiratory studies, and this stuff is going to be aerially sprayed, so of course we're going to breathe it in. So you can legitimately call it an experiment.
Well, of course, they tell us there's absolutely nothing to worry about. You should just stay indoors when they're doing the spraying. But if there's nothing to worry about, why should people stay indoors?
Well, again, it's a good question, Stan. I mean, they're not, they originally, here's the thing there, they originally recommended that people stay indoors during the spraying, and then they took that down off of their website as a caution because they didn't want to scare people. But it is a good thing to do if it's going to be sprayed, but you have to also understand that it doesn't just come down and go away. This stuff is designed to persist in the environment for 30 to 90 days, and then 30 days later, they're spraying again.
Well, of course,
it's going to last up to 3 months, but they're going to be spraying every 30 days. So you're never going to be not. You're always going to have constant exposure to this stuff.
Well, of course, the thing is that they tell us that it is not going to harm the butterflies, but they're very specifically not going to spray the areas where the butterflies are. If there's nothing to harm to the butterflies, why are they going to avoid spraying the areas where the butterflies are? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, it actually does, because when you look at the label of the products that are to be used, they specifically say, do not spray over open water areas or riparian corridors. Those are the areas between land and into the ocean.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Roy Upton. We're talking about the spraying. Now, as I were pointing out, that they have told people that you should not go out when the spraying, you should stay indoors with the spraying, but there's absolutely no harm from the spraying. Now, if there's no harm from the spraying, why should you spray inside when they're spraying? Then, of course, they tell us that it's not going to influence the butterflies, there's no danger to butterflies, but they're going to avoid the areas where the butterflies are. And then, of course, Roy was simply saying that in the directions on the spray, what were you saying about is not supposed to be sprayed over marine areas or what?
Exactly. Open waterways, marine areas, and riparian corridors.
What's a riparian corridor?
Between the land and the ocean.
Okay.
You know, like estuaries and ponds and things like that. Because it is highly toxic to aquatic ecology. So that's stated on the label of the products that are being sprayed on us.
Well, of course, if it's toxic to the aquatic ecology, to the that means, of course, having the water and the ecology of the water, I suppose that would be include fish and other things that have to do with the water, then why would they want to spray the people rather than the fish and the estuaries?
I'm with you. You're not going to get an argument on that from me, Stan. I agree. They shouldn't be spraying us at all. If it's toxic to aquatic ecology, it is toxic to human beings. That toxicity, like DDT, might not show up for 10, 15, 20 years. Remember, historically, things like asbestos took 100 years before we realized that there was a strong connection between asbestos exposure and lung disease. And it took, once we found that connection, it took the EPA another 15 years before they banned it. And they only banned it because they were forced to ban it. So these are things that are important to remember, like with DDT. The issue with the DDT and EPA, it took them 15 to 20 years after knowing how dangerous it was to actually ban DDT. So this is some of the problems that are associated with pesticides that might not show up for 15 to 20 years.
Well, let's get now. Is it harmful to fish? Do we have any idea? They say don't spread it over the open water, but is that because it's harmful to fish?
That's what they say, and that's what the label says. And when you look at the toxicological profile of some of the ingredients, like the tricaprolyl methyl ammonium chloride that's in the Checkmate solution, that's very highly toxic to aquatic life. There are several compounds in the Checkmate that are toxic to marine ecology, which is one of the reasons why it's not supposed to be sprayed over the marine sanctuary.
I think it's really very interesting. We have, of course, a major station here in the central coast of California over in Salinas, and, of course, we've never had any trouble with transmission with them until today. When, of course, we dropped off repeatedly on our association with KKMC, and, of course, that covers exactly the area that's being sprayed. I'm sure it's just a coincidence. Anyway, of course, if you've been very, very outspoken. Have you had any opposition at all to you trying to get the truth out?
No, not me personally, and I don't think that there's nothing to target me on. I have no economic motivation in this. I have no political motivation. My motivation is purely to help protect the people of Santa Cruz and the wildlife of Santa Cruz. I got turned on to it because of the dead birds, and I found out as I looked into it that I should be concerned about this. And I just can't. I don't have anything that they can really attack me on.
Well, now, how do the people in the agricultural field feel about this?
Now, there's a lot of mixed feelings because a lot of the agricultural people believe CDFA's rhetoric that this is going to destroy California agriculture. That's the first myth that's out there. The second thing that they have legitimate concerns about are the trade issues because they're being inspected every 2 weeks. They have to spray their crops with specific things in nurseries and in some agricultural areas. The people growing strawberries have to get inspected, and the people that handle the strawberries actually do more damage than any pest that they have, just from the handling of it. So they're concerned about the quarantine. But again, they don't know that Mexico has already agreed to change their policy if the U.S. changes their policy. They don't know that Canada is willing to re-review their quarantine restrictions if the U.S. changes ours. So they don't know that. They don't know the politics behind it. They just know that the economics is forcing them to be inspected, forcing them to be sprayed, potentially sprayed with other things, potentially having their crops fumigated if they can't get rid of the moth. So there's a lot of misinformation and a lot of fear in the agricultural areas. Now, the organic growers have formally come out and opposed. Originally, they supported, but they, after the fact, came around to oppose the spraying of residential areas and suggested that there should be agricultural control methods, not eradication, as a primary end goal. So part of the ag community is supportive of the spray, mostly because of fear and misinformation, much of that spread by the CDFA, and then part of the ag community is very much opposed, including some farm bureaus like in Marin are very much opposed to the aerial spraying of pesticides on residential areas.
Well, now, what about my understanding is that actually the light brown apple moth is up in the Sonoma area as well, and of course that's where we have such a large grape production over there. Is this a problem for them?
They perceive it as being a problem or a potential problem for them, but interestingly enough, they're not recommending spraying up there, predominantly because they already have pest controls in place that will control LBAM. So, again, they get a buy because they're already integrated pest management practices in their crops. So they don't have to be aerially sprayed.
Well, now, why can't we do that for, as far as our agriculture is concerned? Because this is certainly of no concern to the general population. It's only the agriculture. Why can't we just spray the areas of our crops and bring this thing under control?
Well, we believe we can. But again, remember, though, Stan, is that the moth isn't there. And the reason why the moth is not in agricultural areas is because they're already treating those areas for other things. And so those other tools, whatever they use, I'm not a farmer, so I don't know exactly what pesticides they're using out there in the Salinas or Pajaro Valley, but whatever they're using is obviously already controlling LBAM, otherwise it would have been there. The moth would have already been there. If there's 15,000 that are flying around Soquel, you know that if they weren't being killed off or eaten by predators, they would be loaded in the apple orchards down there in Watsonville, and they're not. The fact of the matter is that everything that those agricultural folks are doing already is controlling LBAM. They don't need to do anything else.
All right. Now, what happens as far as, since if this will destroy the light brown apple moth, what will it do to bees? What will it do to the other good insects that we have?
Well, I developed a paper on the impact of Checkmate and aerial pesticide on bees, very specifically. And here's one of the most dangerous things. First off, nationwide we have what's called colony collapse syndrome. And this is literally hives. Some states have lost 90% of their beehives to this colony collapse syndrome. Pesticide applications are considered to be the fourth leading cause of weakness and sickness in beehives. And remember that the bees are needed in order to pollinate literally a third of the world's food supply. Requires pollinators, and most of that pollination is done by bees. Well, here's the tricky thing on this pesticide spray. It's being delivered in micro-encapsulated delivery systems. That means there are little plastic balls filled with the pesticide solution. Those little plastic balls are the exact same size as pollen on flowers. And so what happens, it's also sticky. So the bees, after the spray, start collecting around the plants, they get all this sticky stuff on their wings, and first, they can't fly. So literally, they die by the millions on the ground. And this was reported after the first spray in Santa Cruz. Second, if they can fly, they gather up these little pesticide plastic balls and carry it back to their beehive. And then they feed the brood, the queen, and the emerging adults with this pesticide solution in these microcapsules that break down over a period of 30 to 90 days. This has the potential, literally, to wipe out most of the bee population in California. And this is something that hasn't even been addressed in an environmental way or to determine what kind of agricultural impact even a little bit of destruction of the bees in California would have on California agriculture. Because the bee industry, the pollination, and the support for the agricultural industry is literally in the billions, tens of billions of dollars that require bee pollination. If you just hurt the bee population even a little bit, the agricultural loss due to that is going to be far greater than any loss that could ever happen with the light brown apple moth. Because the light brown apple moth doesn't do that much damage. It nibbles. It's a superficial leaf roller. But you kill off the bees, now you're really talking about the potential to kill off California agriculture, and the state hasn't addressed that whatsoever.
Well, of course, I would think that this would be a major issue, you know, certainly as far as our farmers would be concerned. And, of course, my understanding is that the Secretary of Agriculture knows nothing at all about agriculture here in the state of California. He's a philosopher or something.
Literature. He has a bachelor's in literature.
He has a bachelor's in literature, and he's in charge of the State Department of Agriculture?
His family were farmers down in Southern California, I think in Orange County, so that's their claim to fame. And, you know, because he was involved in the family farm business for many years, and he was involved in the association previously to being appointed Secretary of Agriculture here. So that's his claim to fame. His family businesses, you know, his family owns farms. He was involved in farming business, therefore that qualifies him. He was also a donor of Governor Schwarzenegger's campaign.
Well, I think that, of course, the one thing that we pointed out when we talked previously, that the fellow who actually manufactures this was a major contributor to Governor Schwarzenegger's campaign. Don't you think that that would suggest a conflict of interest?
I say a lot of people want to look at that as a smoking gun, and you know the unfortunate part about that is, Stan, is that everybody in agriculture pays every governor, and you know greases the palm of pretty much every politician. So now the fact that he was in the top 10 contributors to Schwarzenegger, I find that interesting. The reports that we saw is that he gave $140,000 towards Schwarzenegger's campaign. So to be the top 10, among the top 10 donors, is very interesting to me.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't mind if they want to go over there and spray the agricultural area, where that's where they keep telling us the problem is, but the fact that they're going to spray a carcinogen, a known carcinogen, or several known carcinogens, over the major population, and they're going to do it every 30 days for how long?
Yeah, every 30 days for, they say, the minimum 2 years, and the state legislature gave them the authority to do it till 2018, so that's 10 years.
Well, of course, has anybody suggested that maybe the legislature, you know, really ought to, you know, certainly be held responsible for any damage? Is anybody going to look after the people if there is an increase in cancer, if this is found to have a deleterious effect on the health of the people? Wasn't there some little boy who almost died after the first spraying?
Yeah, right now, actually, there's a time window, I think it closes April 26th, in which people that believe they've been harmed can actually put a claim in against the state. And there's a form that you can download from the lbamspray.org and the stopthespray.org websites, where people that believe they've been harmed because of the spray can put in claims against the state. Now, whether or not there'll be claims allowed 10 years from now if we find a rash of cancer or a rash of whatever, you know, after the fact, I don't think there's any provision for that. But right now, if a person feels that they were harmed by the first three sprays, two in Monterey and one in Santa Cruz, and they feel they were harmed in any way, they can submit a claim against the state. The state has to process those claims. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody that puts in a claim is going to be accepted or accepted by the state, but everybody has the right to put in such a claim against the state.
You have perfectly the right, but nothing's going to be done about it. And if they're going to be the sole arbiters, are they going to have any trials? Are they going to have any opportunity for people to present their case? Or is it going to be you go ahead and put the claim in, ha, ha, ha?
It probably will be the ha, ha, ha. I'm not sure because I've never been involved in such a submission of health effects to CDFA before. But the fact of the matter is that if people do feel that they were harmed from this spray in any way, they should put in a claim because the more that are in, the more they'll recognize this is a serious problem. And if you think it's serious just because of three sprays, what's going to happen when they're spraying 12 counties, you know, for up to 10 years? They're going to have a real problem on their hands. And they might have huge liability suits on their hands later on.
Well, they're not going to do the people who are dying, though, if the carcinogens that they're spraying on the population.
Again, that's not going to show up for, 10, 15, 20 years if it's going to show up at all. And that's the problem, is that if it shows up 15 years from now, nobody makes the connection with this pheromone that was sprayed, 10 years or 20 years ago. Whenever you have distance between, exposure and then the expression of a disease, nobody makes that connection later on, unfortunately. So they're probably going to get away with it. If it is a disease-causing agent, with long-term exposure, they'll probably get away with it.
Well, of course, they do not have. I mean, they say, well, we don't think there's a problem here because it's such low doses. But if they haven't done the experiments, how do they know whether it's going to be a problem or not?
They don't. That's the problem. They have no idea whether or not it will be a problem because they haven't done the test. They just chose to implement a very aggressive pesticide spraying program before they had any tests whatsoever done, and I think that's completely negligence at best. Negligence at best and criminal at worst.
Well, now, what about, certainly far as Australia? Do they have the same light brown apple moth there?
Yeah, light brown apple moth is native to Australia.
I see.
And similarly, in New Zealand, they have control programs that are used to draw beneficial predators into the crops so that the beneficial predators eat the light brown apple moth larvae.
Maybe we ought to try something like that instead of they're talking about putting a million wasps per square mile out here. If we don't go along with them, they're going to release all these wasps upon us. We're going to be back here. Our guest is Roy Upton. Ladies and gentlemen, you need to get the facts, and if you'd like a copy of the program, they are available. Well, Roy, we've got just 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program.
Well, I think that the single most important thing is for each of us that care about our health, care about our children's health, and care about the health of the environment, we have to educate ourselves about this, and we have to educate the people around us about this. If we know politicians that might be personal friends of anybody listening, they need to be educated so they can represent our voice. If you know farmers that have expressed fear, or maybe don't even know anything about the light brown apple moth, they need to be educated that that's not something they need to be afraid of because they're already controlling a lot of bugs that as they control those bugs, they'll also control light brown apple moth. So it won't increase their cost, it won't decimate their crops, and they can go on doing free trade of their produce just like New Zealand, Australia, and Hawaii do. This is also in Hawaii. And Hawaii has been quarantined, but there's no problem for Hawaiian agricultural producers to ship their stuff to the United States. So these are the things we have to do, is educate ourselves and educate others around us. The second thing is, if we do feel that we've been harmed, anybody feels they've been harmed, they need to find the right form to submit a claim against the state. Those forms are available on stopthespray.org website, or LBAM, L-B-A-M, spray.org website. And you can get all sorts of information from scientific reports to newspaper articles to CDFA and USDA publications on both of those websites, stopthespray.org and lbamspray.org. So that's the second thing is educate. First thing is educate. Second is take action if you feel like you've been harmed. And I think the third thing is most important is just pay attention not to let these things continually happen to us. Today it's the light brown apple moth and aerial spraying with pesticide. You know, years in past it's been fluoridation of water. Other years it might be a radiation or genetically modified foods that have the potential for health effects, negative health effects. We can't keep letting ourselves be attacked in the name of science, progress, or government policy day after day, year after year, generation after generation. It has to stop somewhere.
I really think it does, too. Well, I appreciate everything you're doing, Roy. I think that your efforts certainly have been in the front lines of this battle. Let's just hope that the city council, is the city council going to bring a suit, or the county council?
The Santa Cruz County and Santa Cruz City have a lawsuit that will be heard this Thursday morning in Santa Cruz. It will be seminal. Other counties are threatening a lawsuit.
All right, fine. I was just saying that our county, Santa Cruz County and Santa Cruz City Council, bring a lawsuit. I just hope they're going to get. I wish they would have a jury rather than simply hearing it before a judge. Do you think it'll be a jury trial, or simply the judge, who is paid by the state, will come up with the state's conclusion?
You know what? I don't know that, Stan. I have no idea if it's going to be jury or judge. I believe it's just going to be a hearing, so I believe it's just going to be a judge.
All right, fine. Well, thank you so very much. Appreciate everything you do. God bless. Bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, that was Roy Upton. Ladies and gentlemen, those of you, of course, listen to our programs know that they have experimented on the American people many times. If you've never read what we call the Rockefeller Report, it came out of the Veterans Administration in 1994, about the experiments they've done on the American people. They've done on our soldiers and our military personnel, and destroying the lives of many of them. We have a 4-tape set on vaccine A. It's the experimental vaccine they used on the men who served in the first Gulf War. Hundreds of thousands of them are permanently crippled medically because of the Gulf War illness, which was brought about by the experimental vaccine. They can't tell the American people. We have a 4-tape set on vaccine A. We have a 4-tape set on the Tuskegee study. 400 unfortunate black men who were recruited into a study, and they were told they were going to be treated for their syphilis. And, of course, what they were was specifically denied treatment. They were tracked all over the country to deny them treatment so they would die. And who went to prison for that? No one. You ever hear the story of the Yemeni children? 4,000 Yemeni children sent to America, kidnapped from their families, sent to America to be used in radiation experiments, and they almost all died. You can look it up on the Internet. Barry Shamus has written extensively about the Yemeni children who were sent here. What about the polonium studies, where, of course, they took orphans living in orphanages and fed them high doses of plutonium, and, of course, pregnant women, high doses of plutonium, just to see what would happen. Certainly, we do have, of course, the Rockefeller Committee report. It's available through Radio Liberty. You need to get my talk on None Dare Call It Genocide. None Dare Call It Genocide. You need to get my talk on the planned population reduction. You need to get my talk on population control. They're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. You can certainly read my population control agenda monograph, and you don't think these people want to kill off the majority of the people in the world? You've never been to Elberton, Georgia, as I have, and stood in the shadow of those great occult stones. They're called the American Stonehenge or the Georgia Guidestones, where they talk about maintaining the world population at 500 million in constant balance with nature. That means you're going to have to kill off over 90% of the world's population. They know exactly what they're doing. Who put up the Georgia Guidestones? It was all done by, in secret, a man claimed to be R.C. Christian. Many people thought that was a pseudonym for Rosicrucian, but he came to town and put up the money. He said he represented a secret group. Nobody knows who R.C. Christian was. Nobody knows who the secret group that he represented was. And people back there in Elberton know that this is a satanic center. They have satanic programs there. They're naked dancing and all those great things. And occultists come from all over the world there. to the Georgia Guidestones. This is not imaginary. This is real. And if you'd like to go on my website, radioliberty.com, where you can pull down our Population Control Agenda monograph, or if you get any of the other items we talk about, we'll be glad to send you a free copy of the Population Control monograph if you just give us a call. We hope that, of course, you'll want to get my talk on the plan to police state with the syllabus, that you get my talk on the forbidden secret with the syllabus. You need to understand there are people out there who look at the world differently than you and I, who have no concern about human life. We just assume we killed off most of the people like Bertrand Russell, who talked about, you know, how we weren't killing enough with abortion, we weren't killing enough with war, maybe what we ought to do is have a black plague every generation. You need to get my material on the hidden agenda, and it's a great syllabus and talk. And then, of course, please pray for America.